has a gun.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Spitballing with JT. Got a special guest with us today, all the way from Quebec. We're going to talk about his trials and tribulations with the HRC and some comedy. I've been a fan of his for a little while now. Got introduced to him via the Anthony Cumia show and all the great guys over there like Gavin McGinnis and everybody else. So let's get right into it. There we are. Perfect. Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm perfect. So let's start off by introducing you a little bit to the people who listen to my show, just in case they haven't heard of you before. So how long have you been doing stand-up?
I've been doing stand-up since 93, so for like 20 years. I started out as a French comedian because I'm here in Quebec, and there's a really good market for comedy in French. I'd been doing it in French, and then I started in English in, like, 2007.
Really? So you haven't been doing English comedy nearly as long as you've been doing
it? No. It's kind of new, and I'm happy that I started doing shows in English, because now, if I lose my case, I can just move.
That always works, eh?
Marry an ugly American, or move to England or something.
Well, yeah, I think that's the plan for all of us. But you got into a little trouble up in Quebec for telling a joke.
There was a little kid that he sang for the Pope like in 2005 or 6, and it got tons of media attention. The first time he was in the media here in Quebec, his dream was to sing the national anthem for the Canadians. And then he did that, and then he went to sing for the Pope, and that got tons of attention. And he was kind of like a Make-A-Wish Foundation type kid. And then in my show in 2010, I just did a joke that I was surprised that he wasn't dead yet. And I was like, he should have died, and that he was unkillable, and that I tried to drown him. And this whole thing, and his family called the Human Rights Commission. They called my manager, and I just figured, I just thought that was fucking hilarious that the human rights people were calling for a joke in a show in front of, adults. But they took the case. They sent me a letter saying I owed the family $80,000. So I got a lawyer, went to court, and I don't know yet if I won or lost. I'm going to get the verdict in like 3 to 6 months.
Now, they're going to be sending the verdict via email, I hear?
Via email, yeah, which is crazy.
You just better pray it doesn't go into your junk folder.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeez. Well, I don't even know where to go, because I know with the Guy Earl situation, that was... It's sort of similar, but not really, because they're really fucking coming after you. He got off easy compared to you.
Yeah.
But the state of free speech in our country is kind of scary. I've only been doing stand-up for a year, and I don't even know what the fuck I can say. It's one of those kind of situations.
There's something weird about Canada right now. Is I always thought that we had free speech, like in the States.
I was sure.
Like as soon as I got my manager got the call, I was like, free speech. Fuck them. You're allowed saying whatever you want to say.
Exactly.
And then he was like, no, that's in America. Canada is very, very different. But I didn't know.
Fuck. What a hard way to find that
out. Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, I'm lucky though. Like I always see things. I try to see things. I see the positive in everything. And the good thing is, I've been doing this for so long that I have a bit of money. And it's not like if you got sued, you'd be fucked. Or like Guy Earl,
yeah.
he was screwed. So, but I had enough money so that I could get a really good lawyer to defend me. I hope I'm gonna win, but you know.
Something happened where the sound just dropped out all of a sudden.
Okay.
I think it was this background out that was recording it. I just wanted
to... You gotta stop watching porn.
I know for sure that, and I checked the YouTube, we were fine, so I'm just gonna double check that again. Jesus.
Yeah, I hear it there.
See, we're fine. We're good.
Okay.
Sorry about that. I'll cut that out later.
Okay. No problem.
But, anyways, where were we?
I was just saying that, you know, I'm lucky that I was able to defend myself. Because most, like, if this would have happened to me 15 years ago.
You'd be fucked.
I'd be fucked, and I'd just be like, okay, can I settle? Can I, you know?
Yeah, you'd be willing to take whatever number they threw at you, the smallest one.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas now, like, it's probably going to cost me more in legal fees, but it was just the idea of not, you know, having to give money for a joke. It's supposed to be a fucking joke. Like,
yeah, as long as nobody was being malicious, like, that should be the point of it. You weren't intentionally going after the kid to try and hurt his feelings. You were trying to entertain a fucking audience.
Yeah. What's weird, though, like, in court, they kept on saying, at first the family was saying, Mike Ward wanted to drown my son.
Jesus.
And then even their lawyer was saying that, so that almost, like, if someone walked in, it sounded like, the only reason why I got into comedy is because I wanted to drown this fucking kid. Like, it's...
What a way to make you out to be the bad guy, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and I get, like, the all of these fucking social justice warriors, I get that, you know, people are like, you should make fun of a little kid. I get that for some people, you shouldn't make fun of a little kid, but I should be allowed, like...
Do what the fuck you want.
Yeah, exactly. Like, every joke that Jimmy Carr has ever done, you could get someone to say, you shouldn't be allowed to make fun of rape or pedophilia or Anthony Jeselnik. Like, there, you know, comedy should, you know, we should be allowed to try to make people laugh with whatever subject.
Yeah, but even, like, guys like Anthony Jeselnik, even he doesn't even have a show anymore in today's society.
Yeah.
So, it's like, the last bastion of this fucking hope for free speech is the internet. And and even that depends, because, like, I know I've had issues with YouTube, with them suspending my account, and when they suspend your account, it's for, like, 6 months.
Yeah.
You can't do shit. You have to post 15-minute increments. How are you supposed to have anything longer than 15 minutes go up?
Yeah. And, like, even with the internet, like, look at a guy like Anthony Cumia. He lost his job on Sirius because of shit he said on Twitter.
But then I think in hindsight, for him, that came off like a way better situation.
Yeah.
He's in a way better place now than he was then. At least he's doing something he's enjoying.
Yeah, and he got a lot of followers. Like, a lot of the XM subscribers just joined AnthonyCumia.com.
I signed up for XM literally the month he got fired.
Okay.
So I didn't get to listen to Opie and Anthony at all. It went right to Opie and Jimmy. And I have, like, I've spoke to Jim Norton a few times, but, it's not that I don't like the show. It's just I didn't find Opie to be that entertaining.
Yeah.
So it's, and I hate to say that because I like the guy, and I've, God forbid that I ever do good in comedy to fucking get up and be on that show. I have nothing against anybody over there. It's just Anthony kind of, like, listening to the archives, he brought that show together.
Yeah.
And he was able to riff.
I think, pretty much all the fans, or what I'd like to see, is Jim to go to do a show with Anthony Cumia. Well,
with everything that had gone on air, that's how... I think when the contract time come up, I think he said he was leaving, so...
Yeah.
Whether he sticks to that decision is his own fucking...
I think, too, now Anthony has enough subscribers that he could pay Jim whatever salary, definitely, or close enough.
Definitely. Well, he's picking up new shows all the time. They just picked up another one, Mike Fenoya.
Yeah.
And, yeah, well, weren't you on that show already, too?
No, I never did Mike Fenoya's show, but I did Anthony's show with Mike.
Yes, that's what I'm remembering. Yeah. All those guys over there, it seems like such a great environment. I know Rob Mayu, so that's
okay.
I met Lewis through Rob, and he's the only one that I actually know personally over there. They all seem like fucking great dudes.
I don't know why
you wouldn't want to work in that environment anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they're going to have to get a new studio because they have so many shows. And like last time I was there, Anthony, there were so many people. He was in the closet eating before the show. And I'm like, that's fucking crazy that the owner and the star of the thing doesn't even have a dressing room or an office.
Think where he was like 3 years ago, how fucking miserable he was and how happy he's probably even just to sit in that closet and see all that fucking, that mayhem going on just for him.
Yeah.
He's gotta make him feel good about himself, even with all the fucking turmoils he's going through personally and everything with the court cases and whatnot. Everybody's got their own shit. Like, I'm going through fucking court cases. I was in two car accidents. I didn't think it'd be this difficult to get my fucking money. And so the Canadian law system is just fucked.
What was the car accident?
I was rear-ended by a cabbie in like 2010, and then some guy cut me off in 2012, and I T-boned the shit out of him. Wrote my car off. Not fun. I have a sternum fracture.
Oh shit.
Yeah, that's still healing up. Takes forever. It's the only thing you can't put a fucking cast on.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. It's a shitty fucking injury to get. Had I known that, I probably fucking wouldn't have worn a seatbelt. But with everything that's going on in today's society, it's just a fucking shame that when people like you are trying to bring all you're trying to do is bring joy to people in the fucking world. And doing it you're not doing it in a fucking malicious way where you're going after, like, whatever. You were just trying to entertain, be funny, and they shouldn't hold you anyway financially responsible.
Yeah.
If somebody's feelings were hurt in that, people get offended all the time. I get offended constantly. I don't go after people for it.
Yeah, I think it was Sarah Silverman that said, like, last year, that in the old days, if you were offended, you'd just go, oh, I don't like that, I'll change the channel,
leave the show, or whatever. Yeah,
but now it's, oh, that offends me, that shouldn't exist anymore.
I'm gonna get you fired.
Yeah. I had a woman yesterday on Twitter, she wrote this, a blog post about me, And then I answered her. I forget what I told her. And she was like, I will fucking ruin you. She wants to ruin me. And I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with these stupid bitches?
They get that little bit of Twitter, heat, and it goes right to their head. They think that it's the same thing as fame, and it's not.
Yeah.
But, so let's get back to comedy and out of this fucking free speech talk. with doing stand-up for both Canadian or for both English-speaking and French-speaking audiences in Canada, what do you find the differences are between the two audiences?
English people laugh more and French people clap more.
Really?
It's really weird. Like, you get in French, you get way more applause breaks. And you have to be a really bad comic to not get a standing ovation. Like, every show ends with a standing ovation. Even like a mediocre show.
Shit.
It was weird because, one of the first years I started doing shows in English, I was doing the Sudbury Festival. It's a LOL.
Yeah.
And it's been around for 10 years or whatever. And, I was doing an English show, but it was almost half the crowd was French. So when my show ended, all the French people stood up. So the English people just stood up also, they followed them. And then, like, the organizers were like, that's fucking amazing. You got a standing O. And I was like, ah, who cares? You know, and it fucking happens every night. Like, I look like this, you know, piece of shit that doesn't care about the crowd anymore.
Fuck you. Oh, shit. Well, like, have you done any stand-up here in the city recently?
No, I did the JFL 42.
Yeah. That's a great festival that they started doing.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. It's even better than the Montreal Just for Laughs Festival.
See, I've never been to the Montreal Festival. That's another thing I was going to ask you. Is the audience there mostly French, or is it a good mixture of both English and French speaking comics?
For the English shows, it's almost all English.
Really?
Like, since there's two festivals and the French people don't go to the English festival, English don't go to the French.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting. You'd think that they'd want to just hear your shit that you have for the different audiences, like just to get both perspectives of what your thoughts are.
They're starting to like, French people are starting to go see the English shows, because in the last couple of years, like, I started hosting the Nasty Show.
Yeah, so that's your big show, right?
Yeah, that used to be Bobby Slayton's show, and I took over, and that's like, we do, this year we're doing like 18 shows at the Metropolis, and that's like a 2,000 seat venue.
Wow.
So they sell like crazy amounts of tickets. So, and French people start coming since I'm hosting, and they've noticed that there's a lot of French people. So now they're trying to get ways to get the French people to come see the English shows.
So that's going to be a very, very lucrative opportunity then, as soon as they start fucking commingling like that, because you're more and more people showing up.
Yeah, the festival was already, like, Montreal Festival is, like, the biggest comedy festival in the world, but now...
Mecca for everybody.
Yeah, now it's getting even bigger, because they found a way to attract French people. Yeah.
Awesome. Wow. I'm glad at least that at least there's some, like you said, you're very optimistic about the situation you're in, and it sounds like at least stand-up seems like it's going in a good route. Like, stand-up here in the city is getting really, like, good. There's a new club that just opened up the corner.
Okay.
It's down on John Street.
Oh, yeah, I saw you tweeted, or retweeted, Deanne Smith, I think, was playing there, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Fucking great little club. It maybe fits, like, if they jam packed it, like 40 people.
Okay.
And it's just
super
intimate, low ceilings, the type of fucking room that you want to do all the time. And their open mic has like 50 comics in it on Monday night. It's another little comedy store.
Okay.
Like that.
And
I know the guy who owns it went down to the comedy store, saw how they did their shit, and said, all right, this is how I'm going to run my club.
So okay.
I see what he's done, and he's made it work. And it's.
I really like the comedy bar, too.
The comedy bar is great. I've only played at the comedy bar once.
Okay.
Like I said, I just don't get out that often. I've been dealing with car accident shit. And believe me, stand-up has been like the saving grace to the fucking... all the bullshit that I've had to go through these past 4 years.
A lot of comics I've noticed, and this is going to seem dark, but if it wasn't for stand-up comedy, half the guys that do comedy would have committed suicide by now.
I guarantee you that's very fucking true.
Comedians are a really depressed bunch of people. Like, even me, like, I'm super happy, but if it wasn't for alcohol... and doing shows, I'd be fucking, you know, I'd have a gun in my mouth.
No, if it wasn't for pot and fucking comedy, I'd be in the same boat.
So you've been doing stand-up for 1 year?
About a year and a half, but
okay.
I haven't done nearly as many shows as I should have done for being in it that long.
How many times you've been on stage, you think?
Maybe 100.
Okay, so that's not bad.
I should be a lot more. Like,
okay.
I should, like, there's a, I don't know if, do you know who J.J. Lieberman is?
Yeah.
Yeah. That kid's a fucking workhorse. I want to be like that. He's a fucking great inspiration. He's got great work ethic. Fucking always doing shows every night. That's where I'd like to be in the next year. So I'm just slowly working towards that goal, just keeping on track with that.
When I started out, I say I started out in French, but I actually started out in English for the first year and then switched over to French. And I did a show with my first year in with Jeff Garlin, you know, the manager from Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he had told me, he was like, the first 500 shows don't count. And I was like, that's insane, but it's really true, yeah.
I fucking believe that.
Takes at least 500, or even it took me like 1,000 before, like, I knew, okay, this is my voice on stage. This is who I am, what I do.
I've just started to get comfortable on stage, where it's like the shakiness has kind of left my voice, and I'm able to kind of do a free think. What my issue is I'll get up on stage and I'll completely forget everything that I've written down to talk about, and I'll just have to start from fucking scratch. But somehow I've pulled it off. I haven't bombed nearly as much as I should have. But when I have, it's been fucking disastrous. So
what probably helps you though is like doing the podcast.
Yeah.
So you like it, if you forget what you're gonna say on stage, at least you're comfortable enough to talk. And it might not be like if you're just making shit up as you go along. It's not going to be tight and hilarious, but at least you'll look like you kind of belong there.
Yeah, especially like right now I'm talking a lot about like my actual life and the stuff that I've gone through. Like I did a lot of drugs and fucking I had a lot of rambunctious young years. Got all that shit out. Got Hep C, went through that treatment, and fucking all this other shit. So I just talk about that stuff. So it's not difficult to find ways to get back to the jokes that I have, that I know I can go to, that I have worked out a few times on stage that I know work. But when I forget shit and then I'm scrambling, I'm just kind of going off the top of my head.
How much time do you have now after a year?
Probably about 15 minutes.
Okay, 15 that you like or 15? And of that, there's like 7 that's good and 8 that...
More so like the 7 that's like
good
that I'm proud of.
Okay, that's awesome though. Like the first couple of years, what I really miss, and I got that when I started doing it in English again, is like after year one, where you were a year ago, you're way better now, and in another year you'll be way better. But when you've been doing it for like 15 years, the difference between 15 and 16, there is no difference, or almost.
Yeah, the big issue that I've come across is I've never been a big writer.
Okay.
Like having to sit down and force myself to actually write shit out has always been a struggle for me. So I've kind of just used like the apps like Evernote and shit, where I just do voice recording and then go back and write down that. So I'm just trying to figure out ways to handle that kind of situation. I was one of those kids who was fucking riding the short bus to school.
Okay.
It's never been a strong suit with my grammar. So even if I had brought my notes with me on stage, good luck fucking reading them.
Okay.
So I just keep everything typed out.
A lot of comics though don't, like Patrice O'Neill didn't used to write anything.
Really?
So yeah, that I heard that. Like I had met Patrice, but he wasn't like a friend or anything. Yeah. But I heard him like on a podcast, or I don't know, it was maybe from Open Anthony, and he was saying that he had never written anything down.
See, I've met a couple of guys that are like that, and I'm extremely envious of their situation, because I'd like to be like that, but just, I smoke way too much pot.
Okay.
And that's something that's fucking got to cut down on anyway, so...
So you think you'd like, if you didn't write the shit down, you'd think of stuff and then totally forget it?
I think of stuff all the time, and I just, even just forgetting to write it down and then trying to fucking think of it later, and you have to put yourself in like the exact same situation that you were in when you thought of the idea.
Yeah.
Try and get it back. I've done that a couple of times. So I just got to get more serious about it, because this is something I want to do as a career. This is like, I'm on a pension for my fucking disabilities, so
okay.
It's not like I have to worry about going to work every day.
Oh, that's so cool.
That's
like, it's not cool for the guys. Good to know. Fuck, that's awesome. I'm happy that
it takes a load off of, like, I don't have to fucking go work or flip burgers or something. To go fucking just survive and pay rent or anything like that. And my mom is fucking pretty awesome, where I fucking just live in her basement.
Okay.
I can't fucking complain. I'm in a good situation, so this is, if I'm going to be serious about it, I should be serious about it now, where I have
an
opportunity, where I've got no responsibilities, no children. Just, my girlfriend just broke up with me, so I'm fucking focused like a fucking dart right now.
How old are you?
29. I just turned 29 December.
Okay.
So I got into this kind of late now, like, for today's standards, considering there's so many fucking young guys in stand-up now.
Yeah.
Like, half of my buddies are in between the ages of 22 and 27. It's just, and they've already been doing it for, like, 4 years.
Yeah.
It's like, everybody's got a head start on me, but there's a few guys who kind of started around the same time as me, and I'm a little ahead of some of them, and some of them are a little ahead of me, so it's just good to see, like, everybody's on their own course in this. There's no fucking shortcuts.
Yeah, yeah.
You gotta
and some guys, like, some guys make it big in their, you know, late 20s, some 30s, 40s, 50s, or, you know, you never know.
Luck when you're going to blow up, and you got to put in the hours. Nobody's going to just fluke out their first time, like, their first few years. And if they do, they're not going to be prepared for when the shit hits the fan.
Like, remember that guy, Dat Fan, the one the first year of Last Comic Standing? He had been doing comedy for, like, 6 months. And you see him now. Yeah, he was, like, a brand new comic. And he beat, like, a bunch of real, you know, comics that have been doing it for 15 years. And he, like, I saw him last year, and he's a horrible comic. He didn't get any better
better from it.
He became famous, like, way too soon.
See, I don't think that works for comics. I think it might work for, like, Justin Bieber and fucking some singers, but even that's one in a million.
Yeah.
I don't think it can work for a comic ever. I don't think that's ever happened with stand-up at all. I can't think of one.
What's weird is, like, I'm famous on the French side, but not in English. And
that's gotta feel weird, eh?
It's really fun, though. I like that. Like, whenever, especially, like, now with this whole fucking court thing, I can't go to, I can't go anywhere in French Canada without having people come up to me and either yell at me or start crying. It's fucking horrible. So whenever I go to New York, it's just awesome to, you know, be able to, go to the store without having an old lady yell at me. But yeah, I don't even know where I was going with this is, when you're famous, people assume that you're going to be good. So you don't take as many risks if I'll try something, you know, I know that it might suck and I don't care. But if I was famous the first year in, I would have been like, okay, these people expect me to be awesome, so I'm just going to do the same shitty little, you know, 6 minutes I have that I know kills. And then, you know, 10 years later, you're still doing the 6 minutes and you have nothing else.
That's just some hole that some comics fall into, and then you just got to pray that you're not one of those guys.
Yeah. It's really easy, though, to become one of those guys, because, we all have material. Like, whenever I go to New York, I'm starting to do new material now, because the first, like, couple of times, I'd always want to do, like, my best 10 minutes, but then I realized...
You're able to come back, that's all.
Yeah, then I realized, I was like, oh, fuck, I'm one of those guys that, like, people are doing new material, and I'm coming into this little show with, like, shit that I did on Showtime, So I was like, that's fucking weird. I don't want to be that guy. So I'd rather suck once in a while than be the guy that's always good but with the same material.
But see, that's one of those decisions that makes a comic change from being just good to being great.
Yeah.
That is something just simple as that is enough to put you back on a trajectory to be on top. That's just as simple as that.
Yeah. Yeah. Sucking in little clubs will make me great.
Yeah. As long as you suck enough, I guess.
Maybe.
Ah, shit. So me and you were talking before that this show started. I fell asleep during the Trump highlights.
Okay.
Fuck. There are a sideshow down there.
Like, yeah.
I thought it was bad with what we did with fucking Trudeau. And you know what? I got caught in the fucking thing. I in the hype. He was talking about legalizing pot. I wasn't paying attention to the issues. I was focused on everything going on stateside. I just pulled the lever on Trudeau, and fuck, am I ever regretting it now? Oh boy.
What's weird, the day I was in court was the pink shirt day.
Oh, fuck.
And so I get back from my court case, and I'm like, I was pretty confident I was going to win, because I figured, you know, they're not going to stop a comic from being mean on stage. Then I see, you know, my leader with the pink shirt saying words do hurt, and I was like, I'm so fucked.
Oh, fuck.
I'm so fucked. But
you got that sinking feeling in your stomach. You're like, shit. That wallet's gonna be lighter after that.
Yeah, but I don't really think that way. I'm lucky because first of all I don't have any money. Because whenever I have money, I buy shit. I used to buy cars and stuff, and now I try to buy, like, real estate or whatever. So
that's a smart move. Cars can still retain value, too. So cars aren't that bad of an investment, depending on what kind of cars they are.
Yeah, but I wasn't getting, like, nice cars. I was just getting a bunch of, like it wasn't, like, I wasn't making, like, Jay Leno money. I was just, you know, buying a $60,000 car. And now instead, like, I bought a couple of houses, so I sold pretty much all the houses I have, but at least I still have one house.
just be that glass half full guy.
At
the start of the show, because just that's all you can hope for is keep things positive and hopefully things.
No, I'm getting, like, really good free press that is going to cost me $100,000, but it's still, like, if 2 years ago you would have asked, like, if I would have went to see someone and said, look, I have $100,000, get me articles in major papers in England, in the States, I wouldn't have gotten as much press as I'm getting now. So, you know.
Hey, yeah, that's the old saying, there's no such thing as bad publicity.
Yeah, especially the kid, like, if he died now, then that might be.
The cherry on top.
Yeah, and it's like, it'd make the joke just that much better.
Why? It's just, I can't believe how sideways the world has gone just in the past. Like, this has taken, like, 5 years. It hasn't even been the full, like, people want to blame it on, like, Obama or even what, like, because over in Canada, it wasn't, like, Obama. We had our own shit going on.
Yeah.
Fucking years ago that this shit happened. It's just nobody paid attention.
Yeah.
And now that we think we're as free as fucking America, it takes somebody like you to find out the hard way and teach everybody a fucking valuable lesson that,
yeah,
hey, we're not as free as everybody thinks.
I think, though, what's going to happen, I think I'm going to win the case. Well, hopefully I win.
I hope so, because that'll go a long way to bring a little bit of value back to what the so-called freedom of speech here in Canada, or the right to free speech here in Canada. Because, like, they have the right to protest you. Protest the fuck out of you.
Yeah. Even like, yeah, like, like talk shit about me, you know, fucking call journalists. Like he could have called, if he called like the CBC or McLean's or whatever, and just talk shit about me. That you know, he should do that. What's weird though, a lot of people I've noticed that like are against me, and they're like, this isn't about free speech, fuck you, you're an asshole. But like me being allowed to say shit on stage is defending their right to call me an asshole on the internet.
Exactly. And if they don't like that, then we're just going to end up being like fucking communist Russia or whatever the fuck you want to put it like. Because
what's weird is the day of the hearings, I got an email from a guy who owns a comedy club in China. Oh. And he was like, Canada isn't letting you do your act. Come to China, you'll have more freedom here. And I thought that was the fucking funniest thing. Communist China. He was like, I'll book
a
tour.
Great selling point.
Yeah. So communist China has more, like, has freer speech than we do.
Jesus. Well, Mike, I hope the fucking best for you.
Thanks, man.
You get completely cleared, and you have the right to say whatever the hell you feel like saying on stage, because as long as I know that you can say whatever you want, I'm always going to be able to say what I want.
Yeah.
You're always going to be way more offensive than me.
Awesome. All right,
Mike, thanks for coming on, and I appreciate this very much.
Thanks. Good luck. Good luck with your shows and in court and the whole thing.
Thank you. Thank you. Speaking of court, I just got the paperwork from one of my settlements. They're going to give me 35, and I got to pay my lawyers 10 of that. So 25 for getting rear-ended by a cabbie who took off to Pakistan. Not bad.
That's awesome.
All right, Mike. Take it easy.
Cool.
Ciao.
All right,
everybody. Let's finish up here. I got a couple more things I wanted to touch on. I don't even remember what they were. I think one of them was this Milo in the White House. I didn't watch any of the videos, but I've been paying attention to the Twitter feeds. And bravo. That's all I have to say. Bravo for bringing the freedom of speech issue to the forefront in the White House, and how Twitter is using their, what they branded as they wanted to be a utility to control somebody's ideals or speech or whatever you want to call it. And it's that. Hey, if Twitter wants to be a utility, you can't fucking do that shit, man. It's like that. You can't cut somebody's power because they don't believe something that you believe. You can't take somebody's water away just because they don't believe in abortion, for instance. Like, yeah, it might be a dumb fucking argument, but that doesn't give you the right to then take away what you brand as a utility from them. But anyways, that's it for now. Thanks, everybody, for checking us out. And again, thanks to Mike Ward. You can find him at The Nasty Show. I should have got all his information before I got off the fucking Skype with him. And I'll have all that stuff in the description below in the video. And you can also find him at Mike Ward, CA, on Twitter. And if he's got any tour dates, I'm pretty sure he'll have those up there. Thanks again. And tune in for another episode of Spitballing with JT. Thanks.